business insights into our key markets, appliances, HVAC, and outdoor power equipment, and did so both on time and on budget. AmericanEagle.com has the resources, experience, and talent needed to produce solutions. Our new technology platform developed by AmericanEagle.com has produced tremendous results with higher traffic, conversion, engagement, and online revenue. If you have any home repairs you need to take care of, check us out at RepairClinic.com. If you need a world-class website or technology project, then I would highly recommend AmericanEagle.com.
Call AmericanEagle.com at 773-NETWORK. That's AmericanEagle.com, 773-NETWORK.
This is where Chicago goes to talk Bears football. We are Sports Radio 670 The Score. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you in part by your local Hyundai dealers. WSCR Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Sports Station. The Score!
We're back with more Rami Makhlouf and Hub Arkish on 670 The Score.
Yeah, it'll be fun to be back. For me, I think the biggest thing is Chicago is one of the teams that I haven't beaten in my career. There's only a couple of them. I think there's three left, and unfortunately one of them is the Carolina Panthers, so I'm not going to be able to do that. But Chicago and Dallas, another team that I played for, is another one that I haven't beat. So. Yeah, I think that's kind of the bigger thing. I've got friends and people that are there that are going to come to the game, and so it'll be fun to see those guys. But, I enjoyed my time in Chicago. It'll be fun to be back there.
How's Andy Dalton? He wants this one for a couple of reasons. Former team, never beat him. I'm Rami Makhlouf. That's Hub Arkish to my side. It's the Score Evening Show. And joining us now to talk about that matchup with the Panthers on Sunday, he covers those Panthers afternoons on WFNZ and pre- and post-game host for Panthers Radio. Pleasure to welcome in Kyle Bailey. Kyle, how are you this evening, my man?
Doing well, gentlemen. Appreciate the invitation.
We appreciate you accepting the invitation. Kyle, a lot of the chatter this week has been about that trade that went down between these two teams a couple of years ago for that number one pick, and I'm sure you know the details. Most of the people listening to me know the details. No need to rehash them all, but long story short, the Bears will have five players from that trade playing a role for them this Sunday and a second-round pick coming this offseason, and Bryce Young, who the Panthers used that number one pick on, he will be watching from the sideline. Obviously, everyone around here very happy with how that trade played out so far. What's the view on that trade 2 years after from the folks down in Carolina?
Well, you're right. I'm well versed on the subject. But listen, the obvious opinion here is that it was a bad decision, and some believed that they shouldn't have traded up to begin with, but the majority were okay with it. It was an aggressive move, and as I talked about with Hub earlier, I didn't think they overpaid in terms of value. I think the issue is they might have selected the wrong guy. C.J. Stroud is proving that pretty much each and every week in the NFL right now. So, right now it's looking like a loss, and there's a lot of conversation about what happens next, what they should do next, how well Andy Dalton plays this year, if we'll see Bryce Young again, because, Ian Rappaport, others, that day that it happened that he was benched, more or less, I think within 24 hours or so, came out and said that they're looking at this as sort of a break, and we're probably going to see Bryce Young at some point again this season. So, you chalk it up to a loss right now, but still early in his career, and who knows what happens next.
You just anticipated my next question because, you can't give up what they gave up. And then after, 18 or 19 games, bench Young and get rid of him. You just can't do that. I mean, you got to at least give it one more chance. I heard this as being a reset for him, just giving him a chance to take a few weeks off, like so many young quarterbacks have had done. And I just find it impossible to believe that he's not going to get at least one more chance to be their starter after what they gave up to get him. And it's not because they overpaid. To go from number nine to number one in the first round of the draft, it's going to take what they gave up. You just got to pick the right guy when you do it.
No, I agree. And I didn't, like you said, not to rehash it, but I didn't feel like they gave up too much in terms of value. Now, DJ Moore was a pain point for a lot of people when that happened. But back to Bryce, I think you're right. I didn't understand. There was this initial, right after the benching and the national media latched onto it, and a lot of folks declaring he's done in Carolina. There was a Diana Rossini report that he's done in Carolina. Others kind of walked that back a bit, but it all felt like a really big overreaction, because I think to your point, and as we're watching and feeling acutely here in Carolina right now, Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield were just here, and look at them now. You know, so Bryce Young, I was talking to Jake DeLome, Panthers, former Panthers quarterback, about this a couple of weeks ago. And Jake still believes that he saw a lot in the young man last year that indicates that he could really play at this level. And, you know, the first 2 weeks of the season really looked like a guy who made an early mistake, you know, got hit once and all of a sudden was shell-shocked and reverted back to the worst habits at times that we saw last year. So maybe a reset helps, maybe it doesn't, but I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. He took it well. He's being a good teammate on the sideline, constantly communicating with Andy Dalton. So I think we'll see him again. And if we do, I think there is a chance that he could play well.
Talking with Kyle Bailey of WFNZ in Charlotte here on the Score Evening Show. How much has Andy Dalton sort of settled things down on that offense, and how much better does the offense look when you watch every snap?
His influence was enormous. I was there in Vegas when they got the win over the Raiders a couple of weeks ago, and you know, they were talking about noticing a little bit of a difference that week in practice, but man, you could see it, you could feel it. The post-game locker room in Vegas was unbelievable. And Andy's just he's a nice guy. He's an easy guy to get along with, but he's a good leader, and they believe in him. And through two games, he's 1-1, but he's played good football. He certainly hasn't been the problem. He was great that day in Vegas. And he was, you know, pretty good last week against the Bengals, too. The interception wasn't his fault, and he played clean, productive football otherwise. Adam Thielen was down, so they were relying on some young guys who had some drops. So there was still, even after the loss, a feeling of optimism, positivity last week, because they spent a lot of money on the offensive line this offseason, the most in the NFL, and it has paid off. They're the best pass-protecting offensive line in the NFL through 4 weeks. And, you know, they traded for Deontay Johnson. They drafted Xavier Leggett. There are some guys there that can make plays, but you know, after some early chaos, they're starting to kind of settle down a little bit. So I think you're going to see them play some good football over the next several weeks.
Ryan, one of the things that we talked about on your show a little earlier, or at least I talked about, I brought it up, I'm curious if you agree. I think that most of the Panthers' problem have been with the trade, with the quarterback on offense. I think that there are times when the Panthers' defense is playing pretty well. Am I giving them too much credit, or is the defense improving a lot more quickly than the offense?
Well, the defense got shredded against the Saints in week one. I think as we found out over the past several weeks, they gave up 47 points, but it turns out the Saints' offense is pretty electric. So that can be forgiven. You know, I would say they gave up 26 to the Chargers, but a lot of that was about how bad Bryce and the offense were and, you know, continuing to give the ball back. And so my point about this is, you know, the defense is really banged up. That's the big issue. Ejiro Evero lost Derrick Brown, one of the best defensive tackles in the NFL, after week one. Shaq Thompson, their middle linebacker, their quarterback of the offense, just gone for the season with an Achilles. Other linebacker, Josie Jewell, won't play this weekend. They've been without Shy Tuttle. DJ Wonnum, who they signed in free agency to start, hasn't played yet, started the season on the PUP list. Jordan Fuller, who they signed, is, you know, injured as well, and so on and so forth. So they've been dealt blow after blow on a defense that already wasn't that talented, but they did make some acquisitions of guys that had been with Ejiro Evero before, like A'shaun Robinson, for instance, where they thought they could be just as good, if not even a little bit better than last year after losing Burns and Luvu. But the injuries have been awful. The run defense has been inconsistent. So that's the biggest concern within the fan base right now is, can they get stops on Sundays?
What are your early observations, feelings on the new head coach, Dave Canales?
Really optimistic guy, really up, you know, high energy, up tempo guy. You know, it's funny. Baker Mayfield called him an optimist bully, which was really funny. And but it's so true. I mean, it's the perfect description of it. He is relentlessly enthusiastic. Other players have told stories about him across the league. But that's who the guy is. He believes in his process. He believes in what they're doing. I got to spend some time with him in the locker room that day after the Vegas win. And it really struck me that, like, there's a lot, it's all genuine. And so I say that to say, you can be very nice and very upbeat, but you still have to coach in the NFL. And we weren't so sure after the first 2 weeks, but it took guts to bench Bryce Young. And I think he had the backing of ownership to do it, but, you know, he didn't waste time because he knew he would lose the locker room. And I think he earned some respect, especially from the veterans in that locker room. And Andy gets out there, and all of a sudden the offense is fun to watch. And then you remember that Dave Canales got this job because of the work he did with Baker Mayfield last year, the work he did with Geno Smith and Geno's resurgent year in Seattle. So I like what I've seen from a play-calling standpoint. They've been, by and large, prepared the last couple of weeks since making the switch. So I think the last 2 weeks have really started to at least buy back some equity for Dave Canales from the fan base.
You know, there have been multiple reports that – ownership could be part of the problem with some of the roster moves. And you obviously have a much better feel for that than I do. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, it's true. It's a true statement. Now, here's the thing. I say that David Tepper, when he bought the team, you know, all of a sudden I'm on the radio and right away it occurs to you, oh, they have the richest owner in the league now in Carolina. That must, you know, mean good things are coming. And then you look up 6 years later and they've missed the playoffs every year since he bought the team. So there's been some scandal. There's been some missteps in the media. There's, of course, been influence on the football side, which I don't think any fan wants from their ownership. But I do believe ultimately he really wants to win. He really, really wants to win. So, you know, if he can figure out how to, and maybe he has here with Dan Morgan and Dave Canales, hire the football guys, support them from behind the scenes, get out of the way. I do think there's a great desire to win there. He brought a soccer team here that is already second in the MLS in attendance. I know that's not the biggest deal nationally, but locally, I mean, it's a hit. And so he's done a lot of things successfully here. It's just that the football stuff hasn't caught on yet.
Talking with Kyle Bailey, afternoon host on WFNZ and pregame for Panthers Radio down in Charlotte. Kyle, I always like to ask folks when we get guys and girls on from out of town to preview these games, the view from the outside looking in on the Bears and where they're at right now. The feeling here, just to give you a sense, is tepid optimism that we'd like to see more from the offense. We're happy with the 2-2 record and thrilled with what we've seen from the defense so far. From the outside looking in, having done your due diligence and getting ready for this game Sunday, what do you think of this Bears team?
Impressed by the defense. Concerned about some of the weapons. There's no doubt about that. Full disclosure, I liked Caleb Williams coming out of USC. Didn't love him. I've been impressed by a couple of throws, but I always kind of thought it would take him a minute to get there. So, for your sake, I guess, hopefully it turns out great, but we'll see. I like what they've done up there. I think Ryan Poles is a smart guy. He's made some solid acquisitions. We really miss DJ Moore because we know how good he is. I was telling Hub earlier, I'm a Virginia Tech alum, so I think Khalil Herbert is a stud, and then you added DeAndre Swift to that. So the Panthers' run defense has me concerned on Sunday. So I think you've got a really good – I think you've got a great start to what could be a really fun football team, but I'm looking forward to this one. I'm not quite sure how this one goes on Sunday.
And I told Kyle when we talked earlier that a lot of us don't understand why Khalil Herbert isn't getting more carries because he is the best runner on this football team. But that's a different story for a different time. Kyle, coming back to your ball club, though, and what should Bears fans worry about this weekend? Who are some of the young players that they've tried to add in this rebuild who are already looking promising? Who are the guys that you are excited about? There has to be at least a few, if not more.
No question. Starting running back, Chuba Hubbard, he's been around for a minute now. He was drafted by Matt Rhule out of Oklahoma State. But Chuba Hubbard, I remember early in his career, he spent a lot of time shadowing Christian McCaffrey when he was still here. And Chuba's got great work ethic, came in great shape. He's had some great games in his career already, but he hasn't brought that consistency. But he's performing really well to start the season. Deontay Johnson coming down from Pittsburgh in the trade. He's just, as you remember him in Pittsburgh, very fast, very fun to watch, has really made some plays since Andy Dalton took over. Those two have already started to develop some chemistry. Right away, you felt like the Andy Dalton insertion would unlock Deontay Johnson, and it has really started to do that. And then Xavier Leggett, the first-round wide receiver out of South Carolina. If you recall, of course, Chicago had the first-round pick here, but Carolina traded back up into the first to get Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina. Had a big game last week, had his first touchdown reception. He is a big, strong, fast, impressive athlete that could I think, develop into something pretty special. Jatavion Sanders, rookie tight end out of Texas. So, I mean, there's some guys out there that can make plays. Tommy Trimble as well. But I think we're all, to be honest, kind of waiting at this point to see how much this offense can grab some consistency now that Andy's going to be the starter for the foreseeable future. Because with the way the offensive line has been playing, they're going to have opportunities to make plays because this offensive line's been fantastic.
The flip side of that, what scares you if you're a Panthers fan heading into this one?
Oh, DeAndre Swift and Khalil Herbert, absolutely. I don't know if they'll be able to get off the field. The run defense has not been consistent at all, and it was made worse immediately by losing Derrick Brown, who's an absolute monster. I was so excited coming into the season to get to see Derrick Brown and A'shaun Robinson play together, and we got it for a game, and even that game wasn't very good. So It's the run defense for the most part. The secondary, I think, is going to be okay or can be okay, but if they can't stop the run, it's going to be a long day.
Well, the Bears can certainly show a lot of weapons to them. There's no question about that. And, you know, but the way that Swift played last week was dramatically different from the way he played the first 3 weeks. And I'm just not sure with the way that the Bears offensive line has played the first 4 weeks that they're going to challenge that Panther defense.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think this is going to be sort of an evergreen conversation for us because it was already going to be a bit of a concern going into the season because Brian Burns was gone. They lost Frankie Louvu, linebacker, but skilled at getting after the quarterback. And they signed Jadeveon Clowney to come home to the Carolinas. And he played really well in Vegas, but didn't do much last week against Cincinnati. And then on the other side, DJ Wonnum, who they signed in free agency coming down from Minnesota, another former Gamecock, you know, he started the season on the PUP list, even though I think most folks believe that he'd be ready to go to start the season. So they've been kind of plugging and playing. They signed back Marquise Haynes today to try to get something in the pass rush. So no Derrick Brown and a pass rush that was already questionable and then got hit hard by injury. I hear you. I know the Bears' offensive line's not been very good, but I just don't think either one of us are going into this thing with confidence.
You talked about how good that Panthers' offensive line has been since Andy Dalton got under center, and you obviously know the struggles of the Bears' offensive line. Do you think there'll be a seller before the trade deadline, namely any of those interior offensive linemen, and would they be willing to even talk to Ryan Poles again after what happened with the number one pick a couple of years ago?
Sellers maybe, but certainly not at the offensive line position. You know, they're more likely to deal a wide receiver, Adam Thielen to a contender, Deontay Johnson. But even that, you know, I think we got a ways to go in the season. I think they're very interested in keeping Deontay Johnson, who's in a contract year, but I don't know if he's interested in staying. And obviously with now some uncertainty at the quarterback position, he might be looking elsewhere. But yeah, at wide receiver potentially. But yeah, the offensive line, they've sunk some real money into Robert Hunt and Damian Lewis in the offseason, and they have guys they like. So I think they're going to try to keep that group. And that was, quite honestly, they played well all season long, and that was the early evidence that Bryce Young was just really in a bad place. So Andy Dalton's got a group in front of him that's going to give him a chance and give him time to make plays.
You know, Kyle, we spent a lot of time this season so far talking about what Bears fans want and what they expect and whether they're being reasonable or not. And who knows, you know, fans are always going to be fans. Where are the Panthers fans at right now, coming off of everything that went wrong last year? What do the Panthers need to do this year for their fans to be satisfied that this was an improvement? Is it a 7-win season, a 9-win season? What do you think is expected of the Panthers?
I think expectations have gone out the window. In a sense. No, I do, because, you know, with Bryce Young not playing, mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to say because really people have been so invested in whether or not the investment they made was going to pay off, and he's already on the bench. Now, that said, in the here and now, people have absolutely rallied behind Andy Dalton and want to see this team competitive. And I do, you know, not to be redundant, but I think this offense is going to have a chance to, you know, be in games and maybe even win a shootout or two because Andy's still got some, you know, some juice left. But, you know, the expectations are odd now because, okay, if they're out of playoff contention in week 12, 13, are you going right back to Bryce? Does it take that long? There are a lot of questions and ways that this could go. So I think we're just kind of taking it week by week right now. It's a very strange time to be doing sports radio here.
Prediction for this week, Kyle?
I actually like the Panthers. I like the Panthers 23-17. I think they've I don't know. I think Carolina can absolutely win the game. I think Andy is going to be steady and make some plays. So I'm going Carolina, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
That's Kyle Bailey, afternoon host for WFNZ and pregame host for Panthers Radio, and our guest for the last few minutes on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Appreciate the time and the insight from the other side of this thing, Kyle.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Take care, Kyle.
There's Kyle Bailey joining us to preview Bears and Panthers. We'll hit a quick break. On the other side, this Panthers game starts, and I put this in air quotes, a stretch of easy schedule for the Bears. So what do we expect to see here? It's Rami, it's Hub, it's the Score Evening Show.
We're back with more Rami Makhlouf and Hub Arkish on 670 The Score.
How good is the Carolina offensive line? And what makes them good, I should say?
I mean, they're actually very good. They're well paid. They invested a lot to the offensive line this past offseason. They're physical. They have a vet and promoting and at the tackle spot. So, pretty good.
That's Montez Sweat, Ryan Maclough, Hub Arkish Score Evening Show. You're listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT. It's not a game, Illinois.com. And we will continue Bears talk throughout the evening, including Derek Klassen, co-host of the Athletic Football Show. He'll be with us at 8 o'clock. And you heard Montez Sweat talking about the offensive line of the Carolina Panthers. I had to at least try when we were talking with Kyle Bailey up to see if any of their offensive linemen might be available come the trade deadline. You know, I had to throw it out there, get the ball rolling on the discussions.
Can't get them if you don't ask for them.
That is true. And I do hope, do you think, and this wasn't necessarily something we were planning on talking, but do you think that's something that the Bears are looking at between now and the trade deadline is changing things and help from outside the organization if things don't get better with this offensive line? Because I have this discussion with friends, and they're big Ryan Poles believers, and they go, I think I have confidence, I have faith that he'll fix it. And if there's something out there to be done before the trade deadline, that he'll go out and do it.
Well, I think the bottom line is they're going to keep looking at every possibility until the trade deadline. So do I think they would make a change? I think they would if they thought it was the right change. I think what has to concern them a little bit, though, is that you could argue their biggest free agent signing of the 2023 offseason was Nate Davis. You know, and
sure,
you don't want to overreact and then go make another. It's looking like a mistake. I don't know Nate Davis personally. I'm sure he's a good man, and I wish him nothing but the best. He's going to have his $30 million whether he plays for the Bears or not, so I'm happy for him. But the bottom line, and by the way, Ryan Poles, he didn't play at the NFL level, but he played college, and he may have been with a couple NFL teams. He was an offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. That was his position. You'd like to think that he knows at least as much, if not more, about it than any other position. And yet again, I'm very pleased with most of what Ryan Poles has done. But I am concerned about how badly, at the moment, it looks like they missed on Nate Davis.
And I know we were getting some GM speak when he said at the end of the preseason in his press conference that this is the best, deepest offensive lineman that he's been around. That's a GM going to a microphone and saying what a GM is going to say and showing confidence and faith in his guys. Because if you can't do that, well, you're losing before you even step on the field. But at the same time, I did put some stock in that, Hub. Not that he was 100% telling the truth in terms of the quality that he thought he had in the offensive line or the faith that he had in the offensive line, but I put some stock in it that he had some belief in this offensive line. And to see what I've seen, especially in the first 3 weeks — last week was a little bit better — but to see what I saw in the first 3 weeks really makes me question if Ryan Poles believed that to any degree when he said that about the offensive line. Has to make you question his evaluation skills of offensive linemen, despite what you just said, that he played it at a pretty high level.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what he was saying during the offseason is normal GM talk, you know. And I'm not saying he didn't believe it. I'm not saying he was lying. It's just that you really can't make too much of that. You know, the bottom line is that the both athletic talent and just overall, you know, football talent of the tackles, and at least of Tevin Jenkins, you know, you've got three guys who have NFL talent. There's no question about that. You've got a few more who probably do, but we just don't know as much about them. And that's why I keep going back to the same thing. I think week five is the week, every NFL season, where things really start to sort out. You go back to the first 4 weeks last year, they were 0-4. Everybody, you know, wanted everybody fired. Everybody wanted to get rid of them. And they were 6-5 going forward, you know. And I think this is the week where teams really start to become who they are. And I think what we know about the Bears, what we know about all these teams in another 2-3 weeks is going to tell us a lot more about where the NFL is at right now.
Well, that being said, and folks want to talk Bears, 312-644-6767. You want to get in with me and Hub on the Score Evening Show, shoot a text, give a call. We'll try and squeeze in some calls here. But when you say things start sort of falling into place and you kind of start to know who teams are and who guys are in week five, it comes at a good time for the Bears when you look at the opponents. And I'm not just talking about week five in Carolina. They face Jacksonville after that. That'll be their third straight home game. Bye week, and then you go to Washington, to Arizona, and you host New England. The next five games, Hub, look, and that's before the very tough back half of the schedule. That's when the gauntlet starts of Green Bay, Minnesota, Detroit, San Francisco, Minnesota, Detroit, Seattle, Green Bay. Like, that's a tough stretch. But these next 5 weeks, Hub, I don't know if I'm getting greedy. I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself or carried away, which would be a persistent trend for me, I guess, when it comes to the expectations for this team in year three of this rebuild. I want to come out of these next five games with four wins, and I don't know that I'd be satisfied or feeling great about this team with less. And not only four wins, but kind of what I said about this game alone against Carolina this Sunday, I want to be impressed, and I want to see not baby steps. I want to see legitimate steps taken forward for this offense as a whole, for Caleb Williams as a quarterback, because I've said all along, and I think you've said something along these lines, this thing should be clicking by about week 10, week 11 of this season. And that takes us to the end of this stretch of schedule that I'm talking about. Of these next five games, very winnable games, very beatable teams lined up in front of you. If you stay healthy and everything else that goes into the NFL, I want to come out of this with four wins and feeling like this offense has taken a leap from what we saw last week against Los Angeles by the time they line up against Green Bay in week 11. I want four out of five wins, and I want to be impressed and feel good about the direction that this team, specifically the offense, is headed by the end of this five-game stretch. Is that greedy? Is that getting carried away?
I don't think it's greedy, and I don't think it's getting carried away, but it wouldn't be my touchstone. I mean, it could happen, and it would be great if it did, because if they do win four of their next five games, I'll tell you right now, they're going to be a playoff team. But I don't know if that's going to happen, but I don't think that's the most important thing. I think the most important thing is that for this team to have taken a step forward this year, let's forget what their finishing record is. They have to win four of their division games. Those games are all coming, six of the last 7 weeks?
Yes.
If they can get to that point with,
six of the last eight, I'm sorry. Yeah.
So if they can get to that point with six wins and then win four of those, that's going to make them a 10-win playoff team. And I think that should be the focus. I think that with where the division is at right now, I am more concerned about how they play in those six games than I am in the other 11 or whatever it is, because the other 11 are pretty, it's a pretty easy schedule,
yeah,
other than the fact that they're in the best division in football. And so, just get to those last 6 weeks above 500 and then win four of those six. And then I think you're going to call the season a success.
I think what you and I are saying kind of go hand in hand, though, because unless they make these steps or leaps that I'm talking about, I don't feel great about their chances of getting four wins in those six division games that they have down the back half of the schedule. I think this offense needs to get to a certain level, needs to be playing at a certain level to feel like they can get four wins in those six division games that they have on the back half of their schedule. So you may be right in that I'm too hung up on the wins and losses, but in terms of seeing this offense really take, like I said, not baby steps, legitimate steps every week, to the point where in 5 weeks from now I go, wow, they've made a leap. You know what I mean? I need to see that to feel good that they can do what you're talking about, Hub, which is win four of those six division games.
There's nothing wrong with what you're saying, but what you do have to always stay focused on is just remembering again that we don't know who they are yet. They are still one of the youngest rosters in the NFL. And over the next 5 weeks, I don't even remember who all five of those opponents are, but I do know a lot of these younger players are going to continue to improve quite a bit more. They're going to be a much better team in 5 weeks than they are right now. And so I'm not saying anything that you're saying is wrong. I'm just saying that change is going to be measured differently in 5 weeks than it's measured right now because of the improvement that they continue to make.
Again, it's Carolina, Jacksonville, Washington, Arizona, New England. We were talking about, I was saying before, I'm trying to find some kind of measuring stick for the Bears, especially on offense, especially at quarterback. We talked about the teams in the division, and I feel like they're maybe moving a little faster, have moved a little faster than what the Bears did in getting to where they are. That game against Washington in a few weeks, Hub, and there's plenty of time between now and then to discuss it. Fair to look at the quarterbacks in that one, Caleb taking one, Jaden Daniels taking two, and feel some sort of way about the way that game plays out in terms of the progress of this offense and the progress at quarterback, or still too small a sample size, and we'd be putting too much stock in that matchup to put any stock in it.
It's certainly fair. I mean, you can, you know, evaluate whatever you want about the two quarterbacks, but we're not going to know in 3 weeks which one's the better one. Sure. We're going to know which one plays better in that game. But you know, it's funny because as I looked at these six quarterbacks coming into this draft,
love J.J. McCarthy.
I thought J.J. McCarthy, I still think J.J. McCarthy will be the best NFL quarterback of these six. And it's not because I went to Michigan. I know that's what a lot of our listeners are saying right now. It has something to do with Michigan. It's because I've watched every one of his 28 college games two or three times. I've really studied his tape. I also know Tom Brady a little bit. I know how much extra help he's gotten from Tom Brady. I also know other people. There's a lot I know about McCarthy. And I think that he is going to be the biggest winner. Whether he's going to be the biggest talent or not, I don't know. But I think he's going to be the biggest winner. But I had him and Williams, you know, 1A and 1B. It's not like I thought I got to have him instead of Williams. I thought that the polls had no choice. Williams was, everybody felt, the number one guy. And you have the number one pick. You got to use it on him. And I'm not disappointed with what I've seen so far yet. But yeah, I did have McCarthy higher. But as far as Jaden Daniels, I didn't really know as much about him. I didn't know as much about his passing ability. I thought his running ability was more of what made him such a great college quarterback. I've now seen that he can do some great things. But we've also only seen it four times, and it was really only two games that were special. So, you know, give it some more time.
And he hasn't faced a great defense yet. I saw somebody point that out the other day, that the competition hasn't been the highest level.
He hasn't really played a good team yet.
Well,
they have one good, you know, so we'll see, you know. But evaluating Caleb Williams any sooner than the halfway point of next season is too soon. Just continue to watch the development, continue to enjoy what you enjoy, continue to worry about what doesn't look good to you. But I can tell you, with these rookie quarterbacks, we're not going to know who they really are until at least the middle of next season, and maybe even a little beyond that.
And I know that that's true, Hub. And even knowing that that's true, I can't help watch what Jaden Daniels is doing. We're the first year offensive coordinator. You know what I mean? They're not totally in different situations between the two. And I go, why does that look like that? And this looks like this. Why is that the case? And the Bears and Caleb Williams could certainly catch up and make up ground on where Jaden Daniels and that Washington offense is right now. But the thought does run through my head and drive me a little bit crazy. Like, I'd be lying if I said it does.
Let me ask you a question. This may not be fair, but I have to ask it, because how many Jaden Daniels throws have you seen, like the one that Caleb Williams made for the touchdown finally to get to DJ Moore?
Maybe one or two. In terms of squeezing it in that window, standing in a pocket the way that he did. Yeah, maybe one or two, but he hasn't done it regularly or consistently.
No, I've seen Williams make three or four throws like that now, and I've only seen Daniels make one. You know?
Okay.
And those are that's what's going to separate. They could both be great quarterbacks, but that's going to separate the number one from the number two. That's why people keep comparing Caleb Williams to Patrick Mahomes. I haven't heard anybody compare Jaden Daniels to Patrick Mahomes. Different styles, you know, different ways they play the game. Again, that's not a negative, but that's why I'm still feeling pretty good about Caleb Williams from what I've seen so far.
312-644-6767. What do you expect in this quote-unquote easy stretch of schedule the Bears got coming up? You want to talk about Sunday's game? You can do that as well. Shoot us a text. Give us a call. We'll talk with Derek Klassen of the Athletic Football Show coming up at 8 o'clock. More of Rami and Hub Score Evening Show right after this on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
We're back with more Rami Makhlouf and Hub Arkish on 670, The Score.
When Doug Kramer was out there and they ran what apparently is known as God's play there.
In God's play down there was pretty good.
Yeah. What's that, O?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Power O is God's play. Of course it is.
Of course it is. So.
Yes. Whenever they ask me on the sideline, it could be any situation, guys. I'm the offensive line coach. What should we run? Power O. Oh, and it's 30-15. I don't care. Run power O.
I saw you tweeted during the game, Olin. You said, yes. That's the play, with an exclamation point, man.
That's it. That's what we want to run. That will solve, I tell you what, man, that solves a lot of problems. It'll solve your marriage problem. It'll solve everything for you. You just run power O. If you can't draw a power O, you don't even know football. I promise you.
Well, it's also, I have to imagine.
It's a gap play. It's an A-gap play. Okay, inside error. Man on to inside error. Everybody coming down. Pad on the pad, moving people off the ball. Let's go.
Is Carmel Catholic run it? You guys run it?
Listen to me. If we don't run it, I don't show up. Okay? If we don't run it, I don't. We ran it last week about 25 times.
That was Olin Kurtz, former Bears center and Carmel Catholic offensive line coach. Catch him every Friday on the Spiegel and Holmes show right here on 670 The Score. We'll get to your calls, your text, 312-644-6767 in just a second, talking about these next five games. What do you expect from the Bears? Or if you just want to talk about Sunday's game coming up, 312-644-6767. And that power row is, it's just fun. Like, if you're a football guy and you hear Olin describe it, it's just fun. It's just a bunch of large men moving other large men out of the way and trying to move the football forward. If you don't like that, you just don't like football. Like, that's just what it is. But beyond that, Hub, I was thrilled to see those play calls because it was a trend in last week's game. I was screaming last Friday, and I've screamed every Sunday so far this year and various other times about this tendency on third and fourth and short situations to call plays out of the shotgun, out of the pistol, to call these toss plays where the running back is catching it, you know, 6 yards to the left or the right of the quarterback and 6 yards behind the line. And it just drives me nuts when you're moving the ball backwards, when you just need to move a couple feet forwards. Last week, he didn't do that. When they needed just a few yards, they lined up under center. Everybody moved forward, and they just tried to get those few yards that they needed. It was less cute in those situations than I think what we've seen Shane Waldron in this offense attempt to be in those situations in the first three games of the season.
Yeah, I don't like getting involved in play calling only because the reality is we never know what the play really called was. We just know what happened on the field. Now, I'm what you're saying makes sense.
Just the principle of it. Not the play call specifically, but the principle of that.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with it. But the reality is the reason they're doing that is because they're hoping to get a big play out of it. And they're hoping that once they get through that mess at the line of scrimmage, that it turns into a big play, because they're not even trying to get those plays through the passing game right now. They're not throwing the ball downfield. And I think it's just part of what they're doing to go slow with Williams and to try and develop him. They're trying to avoid all the mistakes. They're trying to protect all the turnovers. And I think some of the play calling would be very different if he was in his second or third year. But I think this is all just part of their bigger plan to develop him overall.
Let's go out to the phones and Shorewood, John. You're on 670 The Score. What's up, John?
Hi, guys. Hey. It's always an honor to speak with you about football.
John. Thank you so much.
I know I'm not comparing other shows, but it was good to hear you guys use the word rebuild, because I mentioned that earlier this week, and I was kind of scoffed at about it, because I kind of feel like that's kind of what this really still is. And I know that, you know, that's not a word fans like to hear. But I think that's okay. I definitely think Poles wants to win. I know that. But I think if you were sitting down with him one-on-one, I think what he really wants to find out at the end of this year is if he's got his 10, 12-year guy. Of course he wants to win, but I think he'd rather know that for sure at the end of the year than, you know, sneak in the playoffs at 10-7 and with a first-round exit. I think he'd rather know I got my guy, which makes, you know, the next 10, 12 years of drafting a lot easier. So that's the way I'm deciding to watch this season. I mean, of course I want the Bears to win because I love the Bears, but I really think developing Caleb Williams is more important than winning this year in the long run. In the long run, I think, you know, making sure you have that guy that you can build around for a decade plus. So, you know, that's just kind of my thought on it, man. It's kind of helping me watch the games better because, again, not to repeat myself, but I definitely want the Bears to win. But if I know at the end of the year that Caleb is the guy, I'd be just fine with that, even if they don't have a winning season or make the playoffs. So those are my thoughts. Thanks for listening, guys.
Appreciate you, John.
Yeah, John, thanks for the call. I think at the end of the day, you know, the bottom line is there's no question that the most important single thing or single player this season is Caleb Williams. You know, this is his first year. He was the number one pick in the draft. You drafted him to finally be the franchise quarterback after over 45 years. And so, yes, that is the most important thing. But NFL teams don't just devote themselves to one player or two players. You're not just doing everything focused on one guy. You're trying to develop the entire roster. And the most important guy to make progress this year is certainly Caleb Williams. And the most important guy to convince you that he has the abilities and the special techniques that most guys don't have. Yeah, those are critical. But you can't, when you talk about these rebuilds, you're rebuilding an entire 53-man roster, 46, whichever number you prefer. And that's why it takes 2 or 3 years. And that's why it is just too soon for the Bears to expect the Bears to be competing equally with teams like the Chiefs or even the Eagles or the, you know, the Ravens, pick whoever you want. They're not there yet, and it's going to take a little more time.
I would add this. When you say it absolutely is more about Caleb Williams than it is how many games they win this year, because you find a franchise quarterback, and like John said, you're setting yourself up for success for a decade or more. But that doesn't mean it's not an either or. It's not a binary decision. They can win games and develop Caleb Williams. And I can watch both those things and evaluate them separately, but I can want both. And the other thing is, when we talk about some of the things that stop them from winning football games, specifically the offensive line, maybe some of Shane Waldron's play calling, but I won't get lost in the weeds on that. Those are the very same things that are going to play into Caleb Williams developing. A bad offensive coordinator, if Shane Waldron is that, I don't know that he isn't, but I'm just saying, generally speaking, a bad offensive coordinator and a bad offensive line will stunt, if not entirely derail, a quarterback's development and growth. So there, those two things, winning games and the rebuild and the process of developing Caleb Williams, those are not separate things, and it's not an either-or proposition of we can develop Caleb Williams or we can win football games. You can do both, and as a matter of fact, doing something for one helps the other a lot. Like they are intertwined. They are inexplicably intertwined, and there's no separating them. Hub.
If you are doing a good job of developing Caleb Williams, and he is a franchise quarterback, you're going to be winning more games.
Yes.
Those two things are going to come together. And that's why I think it's smart just to keep the focus on Williams, keep the focus on reasonable expectations. You don't expect, you know, Jaden Daniels type games like the last two games, because that's not normal for a rookie quarterback. But that's where the focus should be. And that does appear to be where they have the focus. You know, what's hard for me, Rami, is I didn't know that much about Shane Waldron when they hired him. I mean, I knew who he was. I knew where he'd been. I knew he was a qualified candidate. But I can't say that I had studied his work all that closely. And so, you know, this has been a learning process for me in the first 4 weeks in training camp of learning what it is he is trying to do, what he's going to do, how he's going to develop Caleb Williams, how he's going to fix everything else. And there were other offensive coordinator candidates who I did know more about. I just don't know as much about Waldron yet. And I like the way they went from, well, I didn't like the way they went from week one to week two, but I like the way they went from week two to week three, even though they didn't win that game. I like the way they've gone from week three to week four, but we've got to just keep watching that and learning more about Waldron before we can really evaluate him. We've got to know more about who he is and what he's capable of.
Get back to some of your calls and text on the Bears, the big picture, Sunday's game with the Panthers, 312-644-6767. That's after we talk with Derek Klassen, co-host of the Athletic Football Show. He'll join Hub Arkish and myself, Rami Makhlouf, on the Score Evening Show right after this.